Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities. Dr. Mary Owen is joining us this morning on the phone as our guest on this program, as she has done many times before. But it is a sad and complicated world that we embark upon on this Monday. At least for some of us it is. For some of us it's been that way perhaps as long as they can remember. Mary Owen this morning to talk with us a little bit about the indigenous response to the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer last week and the way the world has unfolded since then. Mary, thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's always really good to talk to you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Talk a little bit about not only the indigenous response here in our community, but the indigenous response to the killing of Mr. Floyd, but why it's important. There's been a lot of conversations and long-needed conversations about Laura Erickson, as a matter of fact, made the same suggestion just a few moments ago, that white folks sit down and be quiet and listen. Why is it important also that we hear what indigenous people have to say at this time?
Well, I appreciate Laura's words, but I think it's even more important that white folks not just listen, but you get active. Indigenous people, people of color, African-American people, African heritage people, for a long time have been saying the same thing, have been trying to say what's been going on in our lives, and we don't feel like it's been heard. People are frustrated with this anger and this violence that's going on, and I get that. I completely get that. Some of the institutions that I've spend a lot of time in have been impacted, and people are without food and without medical services as a result of the violence. But I think it's also critical to recognize that voices have not been heard. And it hasn't just been in our lifetime. It's been 400 or 500 years that this oppression's been going on and that people haven't been heard. And COVID-19 is just exposing that, because people of color, again, are being impacted disproportionately. It's more people of color, and particularly African Americans, who are losing their jobs, who are getting sick from this infection and impacted. So we want non-people of color, we want white folks to not just listen, but get active, be angry about what they're seeing on the screens as far as the mistreatment. And it wasn't just George Floyd, right? It was what we saw from the woman in Central Park and her ravings and attempts to get an African-American man jailed, or maybe not jailed, but definitely impact his life because of her own stupidity.
I had read someplace the other day that she had deliberately leveraged, she was well aware of the prejudice in the system, and she deliberately leveraged that privilege with her assumption that as a white woman, I can call the cops on this man because he is a black man, and I can get him in serious trouble over, you know, basically my mistake and the fact that I'm, you know, ashamed, embarrassed, whatever. I can lie and I can get him in serious trouble with this. Therefore, I get to have my own way. She knew exactly what she was doing and exactly the way the system was set up.
Of course, that's what people of color saw. We all knew. We've seen it before. So that's what we want people to realize, that all these years, you know, it has been there, it has been in existence, and it's just that it's not always seen the same way. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar writes an excellent op-ed in the L.A. Times in the last few days that explains some of this anger and this frustration over these events and the different ways that people are seeing it. You know, brown and black people are seeing it one way, and some white folks, or most white folks, seem to be seeing it enough, have always seen it a different way, because you're not impacted the same way.
Mary, let me ask you about something that, in my mind, cuts really to the heart of part of the problem here. We, as white folks, in many instances, we have these laws set up. We obey the laws benefit us, so we don't think about them. Or we like to think that they benefit everybody. We don't have the experience of the way that they don't. We are brought up in a certain way to respect property, and you don't destroy property, and this, that, and the next thing. I'm telling you what I've heard a million times. I understand a little better, I hope, but so now it's very hurtful. But I've heard a million times about how Native people don't have any respect for property. They trash this or that on the reservation. They trash this or that here. And white people just, it's like, that's kind of where, you know, when you start destroying stuff, that's where the comments, that's not how you get things done. You don't destroy people's, you know, you don't destroy their businesses, their livelihoods, etc. How do you communicate the impotent rage that accumulates over a lifetime or generations, many lifetimes, of not being heard, not being listened to? Because that seems to me to be the key understanding that's going to get people who are not people of color to getting what's going on.
Well, first of all, Lisa, let me tell you that I don't think that that's a fair assessment. I mean, it's I have heard from several people in the Twin Cities, other doctors who are working down there, and other colleagues, that it is, in fact, AIM, the American Indian Movement, and other people of color and other Native Americans who are doing some of the protecting of buildings down there. We have seen on the social media how AIM has caught some people doing some of this destruction. My daughter and her boyfriend live two blocks away. They're both students of color, or people of color, two blocks away from Lake Street, and are out there guarding their building against some of this destruction. So we're not all about, despite this myth that you're telling me about, fortunately I haven't heard much of.
Well, we're
not all out there destructing things.
No, but they're not.
The way to get this message across is exactly what I just said and what Mr. Jabbar has also written. We just have to tell you and hope that at some point you're going to understand that this is not about one episode of police brutality. It's about repeated episodes of police brutality against brown and black people. It's about repeated incidences of our not advancing in the educational system, not because we're not smart enough to, but because the system doesn't understand the differences that we need. That we need to see more of our own people in the system, and that there are systemic problems within the educational system that keep us from advancing. For instance, look at the discipline rate in this city. Why is it that over and over African-American brown students are over-disciplined compared to white students in this system? It's something that that ISD 709 is dealing with right now. How about housing? We know from history about redlining in communities. We know that African Americans are not, and brown people in general, are not offered the same rates of rent of mortgages. It's not something that we make up. It is proven over and over and over in our history. So why is it not understandable that we would respond to this, or that this would blow up, particularly in the time of COVID, when everybody's under stress?
Do you have the sense that a couple of things. Do you have the sense that the difference in response to all right, let me try this again. Colin Kaepernick, is that an example that people who are not people of color can see? Hey, look, here was a peaceful protest that tried to make a point, and everybody came down on this guy like a ton of bricks. So what are you supposed to do? Does that help to, in one way, clarify the point?
That, and how many, I was on a call not too long ago. Yes, Mr. Kaepernick's demonstration and the lack of ability to people to hear what he was talking about is definitely a good example. I was on a call with other faculty last week, and an African-American physician and faculty member said, look, you know, I was born in the time of the killing of Emmett. Sorry, I'm on air, so I'm forgetting. I'm just blanking on names. But
I want to say Emmett Brown?
No.
Okay.
Still.
Sorry.
It's all right. I think we're both blanking because we're on air. But in any case, he's been seeing these for decades, these same protests, the same issues over and over and over. And mine, and I think other people's greatest fear, is that this is just going to be another one, and nothing's going to change as a result of this horrific violence.
So one other thing that I guess I did wonder about this morning is that there is such a social media is disparaged for a lot of reasons and a lot of excellent reasons. But there is a lot of very real, very personal, very powerful conversations going on social media right now. As a result, it's a really hard place to be. Some people reject social media for the bad things that it does. Some people are maybe taking a break because they're finding it overwhelming. Is that another example of white people having the option to turn away and say, well, this is just too much. I won't deal with it right now.
You mean by not looking at social media?
Right. Because I think that the role of news is different. I don't think news and social media are the same thing. I feel pretty strongly about that. But I don't think that you can get as complete a picture of how different kinds of people feel via the news the same way that you can perhaps via social media.
Well, you know, I look around me, and as much as kind and good as my neighbors are, all of them seem to be going around about their business as if nothing's going on. And again, that's just the surface. I don't know. Maybe they are having great angst too, but I can't help but wonder, are people aware of what is happening in the world around them right now, the significance of these protests and the violence, of how much life is behind each of these protests and this violence, and how much suffering is there? I don't know. It's not just not watching the news or social media. It's engaging in general. Is it happening? I don't know. I hope so. You know, people of color are not looking for, and I've said this on my social media page, we're not just necessarily looking for sympathy, we're looking for empathy. We need people to understand. We need white folks to understand and to get angry and to help us make change. So I hope people are engaging. But,
yeah. Mary, I think a lot of people do want to help. They do want to make a difference. They do want to dig in. And now is when emotions are running high is perhaps a good time to take advantage of that. If you want to help, where do you start? How can you start without making a step wrong? Sometimes it's hard to be a clueless white person who's trying to rethink attitudes and rethink ideas. And sometimes you set a foot wrong and you don't want to make things worse. How do you help?
Well, you help by saying the same messages that we've been talking about online. You say that, look, I understand this violence is bad, but I understand that change has not happened for people of color, African Americans, Indigenous people. And call your elected officials and tell them that. And then tell them, look, the city has been ravaged down there, and people are suffering and without. How are we providing for them? You know, Broadway Clinic, the clinic that I trained at to become a family practice physician, was completely gutted. Now people are without medicines, without their health care. How do we rebuild that? Ask your legislators, ask your elected officials, how do we take care of these issues? How do we meet the needs of people of color? And why aren't you down there asking our leaders, why aren't you down there talking to the protesters? Because they are not all outside agitators, as many people would have you believe. There are plenty of people who are doing real protests down there. And maybe some of them are acting up and being violent, again, because of the things that we talked about today.
Is the idea of outside agitators, is that, how does that harm the message of the protesters when the theories begin to circulate that people are coming in with unmarked cars and without license plates, and people are coming in and they're the ones that are causing the problems? How does that harm the message of these protests?
Because it gives people the idea that it's not about what the people from Minnesota protesting, and in fact they are. Minnesotans, and not just African-Americans, people of color, but white folks down there are protesting for good reason, as we have discussed. So by claiming it's all these outside agitators, you distract from the real movement. And it's critical that people understand that. This is a movement for change. And yes, there are some outside people coming in, but, you know, Martin Luther King, I think you and I talked about this before the show, Martin Luther King was accused of the same thing when he went to the South. He was called an outside agitator when he was trying to help make change. So recognize that there is a real protest that is important to listen to.
And keep the focus on what this is about.
That's right.
Mary, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights this morning. I appreciate your taking
thank
the time.
Thank you for the time, Lisa.
Dr. Mary Owen joined us this morning as our guest on Journey to Wellness in Indian Country today. Today's Journey to Wellness is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving healthcare access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities.